Previously on Cartoons That Curse.
What the f*** is up, everybody? Welcome to Cartoons That Curse.
I care about you guys, and I care about your taints, and I don't want them to get
banned. You're the nicest guest we've ever had. No guest has ever told us that.
No guest has ever thought I told you that they care about your taints. Well, no. Allow me to be the first.
You think Man of a Thousand Thoughts would show a little compassion, but I didn't hear any of that.
Watching them for years, it's always been something that fit with all the animated characters that's doing their own bits. With a fry who's in the future and a Family Guy that sucks. With a father from a Hilleberger family runs amok. The show and Spies is the same guy, except he totally same. End of verse.
Let's watch Cartoons That Curse.
Okay, Coyote Lovely. This.
Great title.
Great title.
True.
This is the episode where they're trying to stop a caravan of immigrants from entering the country. And you also find out that Lana is super anti-immigrant.
Dude, which is crazy because, okay, so Brett and I have been rewatching Scrubs lately as like our background show, like when we're like cleaning the house or like doing other things and we're not really paying attention. So that's been like our background show, and there is a full-on episode where Elliot admits that she's a Republican, where she says it, and I'm like, you could do that in the early 2000s. Like, you used to be able to say that you're a Republican and it could be funny. Like, it could be considered. Now it's just horrifying.
Yeah, they really lean into like the specifics of why she's like so against it, which, you know, admittedly is like, there's like, I mean, that's also not like being anti-illegal immigration isn't just a Republican thing. Like Democrats, there's a lot of Democrats who are like,
I just meant it with a similar vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But it is like a surprise. It was a surprising one. They kind of lay that out in the episode where Archer's like, wait, Lana, you're anti-immigrant? Weird.
Yeah. How are you?
Yeah. This is another good, this is just another episode where Archer is just fully selfish and derails the mission for the sake of himself, which, as it turns out, the twist was that that's what they expected him to do. There's a lot of like twists this season. I feel like
there are a lot of twists this season. You're right.
They do it in Viscous Coupling. They do it in Live and Let Dine. They do it in this one. There's a lot. They do a lot of twists. I loved the way Archer bonds with like all of the immigrants who he's kind of helping, but really just being selfish about. And I don't know, there's all those funny moments between them. And like, I love when the old lady pulls out the gun and like shoots the cop, the border patrol who's trying to pull them over.
Yes.
There are a lot of funny moments like that. I like the visual of them having handcuffed the two Border Patrol agents together so that they're hugging.
They're hugging.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that too.
Quick little Border Patrol snug. BP snug.
And also just like
BP snug.
BP snug.
BP snug. You know what I mean? Like
in parentheses.
Yeah.
BP snug.
Small print, yeah.
They can be snug as a treat, but also
as a little treat.
I also like the visual of just so many people in that station wagon. So many people in that station wagon. That's really funny.
Yeah.
You guys got any thoughts? How do you feel about Coyote Lovely?
I really liked it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was fun. Nice time.
Whitney Van Lanningham says fun, nice time.
I agree. I like this one too. I think Cyril slapping Archer was like really, that was like a tense moment for me. Just like that one brief second of like Archer trying to process what just happened. I thought that was really tense. Tense enough to note.
For sure. Yeah, and then yeah, but the, and then like the big twist, I guess the big twist ending, I didn't really understand how the twist worked, to be honest, because like the twist was that they were doing it on purpose. They were playing to Archer's like weaknesses, but yeah. How did that lead to them being able to get the full caravan across the border? How did they do that? Like, I don't really understand the logistics.
They assumed that they would have a need for Archer to leave with everyone so that they could sneak past. Like, I don't know. They just, cartoon logic.
Cartoon
they logic. Just assumed that that's how it would work out. And then it did, kind of like when the, you know, with the Cyril and the tree thing. Just like.
Right. Cartoon you know, logic.
Like they just, it would just, like, they just assumed that that's how it would work out, and it did. Good times.
Well, there's some fun stuff in this one. You guys have any? Oh, I also just like the visual of the moment where Archer asks Cyril if he's wearing Kevlar, and he's like, duh, because I'm not an idiot. Oh, damn it. And then he just shoots him five times in the chest.
Yeah.
Oh, man. And then, like, just the visual of Cyril's bruised chest the rest of the episode. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, brutal.
And was it Cheryl or Pam who called him Grimace? Someone called him Grimace. Yeah. I thought it was one of them.
It's probably
if I'm wrong
them.
About that, fix it in post. Just bleep the name. Just kidding. but I really loved that somebody called him Grimace after that. I just forget who said it.
For sure. I don't remember who said it either, but Grimace. He's Grimace.
One of them did. It was a good joke. He was purple. Grimace was purple. Good times.
Yeah.
Nice times.
It's a good ref.
By all.
Sick. Body it's a down. Sick ref.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys got any thoughts on Coyote Lovely? Yeah. All right. Let's move on to the Honeymooners. This is like the big episode. That's one of the big episodes in terms of like, I guess there's a couple in a row here with Lana and Archer sort of getting close again. And so this is the one where they have to pretend to be newlyweds for their secret mission in one of the Tuntmore hotels owned by Cheryl. And then obviously Cyril is so insecure that he goes and like follows them to watch them and make sure that they're not hooking up.
Yeah, but Lana does almost fuck him. She's considering it.
I didn't realize until like around the end, but this is the second time he does this.
Yes, because he did it in season one.
Yeah,
I don't actually think Lana was going to fuck Archer in this. I think
she was against it.
What from her saying that like she's made her a decision or whatever?
I don't know. I felt like she kept alluding to it because she said that twice.
Here's what
I
think
she was going to fuck him.
Here's what I think she was actually alluding to, and this is spoilers for later in the season, but the season two and for future seasons, I guess. The season finale is when we reveal that Lana is pregnant, right?
Yeah.
So that's the big reveal at the end. And I'm pretty sure they later reveal that, well, she says she got a donor, but the reveal, I'm pretty sure the donor is Archer.
Yeah.
So I believe her decision that she's making is whether or not she wants to have Cyril's kid or Archer's kid. So it's not even, so she doesn't even cheat. She doesn't cheat on Cyril with Archer. She just chooses to use Archer's semen.
That's what it is. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is rough.
I thought it was still rough. She almost fucked him. Okay, but
I do think that's what they were trying to make it seem like, but I think the recontextualization is that like because I think in this episode she decides that she is going to go with Cyril, and then Cyril fucks up so bad at the end. She's like, I'm making the decision.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what it's alluding to, which is interesting. And yeah, it's also interesting that she like was like, yeah, I'll have Archer's baby, but he doesn't need to be involved. he's not involved, which I guess we'll talk about later. This episode has crazy action, like the sequence where them climbing up the building.
It's animated so well. With Lana Falls, animated so well. It's looked too great.
That's crazy. That's
bonkers.
That is such a like cartoony thing. Like that's like so action movie. I feel like there's nothing quite that crazy in any other season of Archer where it's like, oh, they would neither have made it out of that situation. You know what I mean? Yeah. But it's like when he dives down and catches her and like it's like very Mission Impossible. It's like Ghost Protocol, which is a good movie. Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol. But yeah, it's I like this episode. I think this is a really good one because I really like the kind of like I like the Archer and Lana like dynamic when it's positive and negative. Like I like when they get on each other's nerves and stuff, and I like it's just funny. It's just a funny thing to watch. Mm-hmm. And also just like Cyril being pressured by Cheryl and Pam is always funny.
Yeah.
It's like he always makes the dumbest decisions, and it's always because Cheryl and Pam are like egging him on to make really bad decisions.
Not only is this the second time that he did this, he does it the exact same way because of the exact same people.
In Skytanic, exactly. It's exactly the same, which is really funny. Mm. Yeah, agreed. I'm a big fan of that dynamic. And now that we're like four seasons deep into the show, like obviously in season one, we were starting to see how Pam and Cheryl are like kind of nuts, but now they're full nuts. They're full blown nuts in this season. Yeah. And we get all
phrasing.
Oh, it's so funny. I also like at the end when Mallory's pissed that she has to pay for like all of the destruction that they caused at the hotel. And she's like, but someone who works here could like get this all taken care of immediately. And she's like, I have to answer to my board of directors. I don't really.
And then Pam is like, do you even know what that means? And she's like, I really don't. I have no idea what that even means.
Oh, I love them. Cheryl and Pam might be my favorite characters. They're so funny.
Great.
They're definitely mine.
Yeah.
They're ridiculous. I guess it's just because they're so outrageously ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And they really stop. And they really just like, they really just let them let loose starting with season three, where they're just like, oh, they're both absolutely insane characters.
Right.
All right, you guys got any thoughts on Honeymooners?
I love this one. It has, I have three gags kind of in a row that I really love. The first is, I think it's the cold open with like Pam's humping the burrito. It's so funny.
Oh my God. I forgot about that.
Yeah. It's so funny. They give Cyril like this really like puzzling facial expression that I also think is really funny when he does that. And then they do like a flashback to like Cyril and Lana like having sex, and I guess Pam overhears it, and then like she says like add it up is crazy.
add it up is insane.
Add it up is nuts. And the last one I have is they ask Pam, were you raised in a barn? And she says, no, I just slept there a lot.
Oh, man. Do they ever do any, like, do we ever go back to Pam's childhood in the show? They have to at some point, right? Like, or go back to, like, where she grew up, because she's born on a dairy. She grew up on a dairy, which we learn earlier. So, like, she has, I feel like we go back to Ray's hometown. We gotta go to hers at some point, right?
Maybe.
We'll find out eventually.
How does this one end again? Oh, I have written down, dude, the end is so gross, but I don't remember what it is.
Fuck, I don't remember.
Why did I write that and like not write what the end was?
Let's see. Sometimes these wikis have the ending beat.
What's so gross about
that's
it?
Annoying. That's annoying. The wiki for this one specifically is not very.
Trying to sabotage the pot, man.
Let's figure it out.
Um, trying to sabotage.
Oh, it was. Oh my God! It's.
What is it?
It's the reveal. It's the reveal that Krieger was there to sell them uranium, and he comes in and he's got like the and he's got the radioactive pig that he just feeds all the dead bodies to them. That is fucking crazy.
But not even just that. He says like he's. Because they insinuate early in the episode that he had sex with the pig. So he says, like, you earned it. And it's like, he's, watching the pig's ass while he walks. So that's why I wrote it was gross.
Okay. Krieger is the grossest character. Holy shit.
He really is.
He's so funny, he's but sick. Oh my God. It's like, he's it sick. Just gets crazier and crazier as the show goes on.
That's why I said it was gross.
That radioactive pig. Yeah. I do like his... Oh my God. Fuck, what is... I just remembered a joke that I love so much, and I can't remember what episode it's in. It's the one. What's the one where Archer needs to turn the? Oh, you know what? I think it's at the end of the season. I'll just say the joke now because I love it so much, and I can't remember what episode it's in. But it's the one where Archer's complaining about how. Krieger mods the guns and he doesn't know what the safety button is, and they just do a cutaway to Krieger on a pile of coke drumming while modding a gun.
that's in the finale.
That's in the finale. Damn. Yeah, sorry, so way early.
No,
on that.
I love that.
It's
part
such
too.
A fucking funny joke. Oh my God. That was a cutaway. When that cutaway happened, I literally like cackled for like 3 minutes. I should have voice memoed it.
Yeah, you should have.
Oh my God, so good. All right, let's move on to, I think I'm saying this right, Un Chien Tangerine.
That's Un Chien Tangerine. Play on the movie Un Chien Andalun, I believe.
What movie is that? Tell us, Whitney.
It's the one with the eyeball that they cut open.
I don't want to see that movie then. Written by Salvador Dali. I had no idea this is a thing. Good title though.
Yeah, dog.
Wild. So I have two notes for this one. I like a lot about this episode, but I wrote two notes. One is the dog! Exclamation point. And the second note is more farts than I remembered.
I didn't write any notes about it because all that was going through my head was big pug.
Big pug. He does look like a
big pug.
What kind of dog is he supposed to be? Is that like supposed to be a real kind of dog? It should
maybe
be.
Maybe like a, what do you call him? Either like a mastiff or a, what are the other big ones
Kazakh. It says he's a mastiff.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to tell when they're animated, but
it sure is. But you know what? If there's one thing we can all agree on, it's I know my dogs.
You know your big pugs.
Know my big pugs.
This is an episode. This was one of the episodes that, like, watching through this season, I only really remembered going in. I remembered the premiere, the Bob's Burger stuff. I remembered the finale with the C-Lab under the sea stuff. And I remembered the dog episode. Those were the only three that I'm like, oh yeah, season four. Those are the ones I remember about season four. And I didn't remember any others until we were watching through them again. And this was like always one of my favorites.
I love this one very much.
It's very,
very, very funny.
Very, very funny. And also I just love that dog, and I love Archer's like dog friendship. Archer just connects to animals so much. It's so funny every time.
It's great.
I love it. He's like Eliza in The Wild Thornberry. It's like he can talk to
them. Yeah. Yeah. Just like Eliza Thornberry.
Yeah, I can't wait for the movie crossover. Archer Goes Wild.
They get Paul Simon to do another success song on the soundtrack.
Finally. This is what we've all wanted.
They bring Bruce Willis back.
Who did Bruce Willis play again?
He's the Rugrats' dog in that movie.
That's right. Spike.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's so funny.
Tim Curry is Nigel, which is my favorite fun fact of all time.
Love that was how I think that was just how I learned of Tim Curry.
Oh,
was,
really?
Was yeah, was when I was watching that show as a child.
I didn't even realize that it was him. So I didn't realize that it was him. And then he also voiced Rex Pester from the Rugrats movies, you know, the news anchor. Oh,
it's Rex Pester, big action.
Oh,
name.
I don't think that I knew guy, that.
So he was Nigel Thornberry and that guy. But I, when I was a small child, my mom used to let me listen to the Rocky Horror Picture Show soundtrack because I really liked it and it was music and I didn't know what any of the words meant. And so that was my first intro to Tim Curry, was just the soundtrack of that. And it took me many years to realize that he was both Nigel Thornberry and Rex Pester. I didn't realize that till I was like a teen child.
He's in one of my favorite animated things of all time, Over the Garden Wall, as a character named Auntie Whispers.
Yes.
And a very spooky character, a very good performance. And I like him very much. Big fan
of
his voice.
Oh, shit. Acting. You know what my favorite fucking Tim Curry movie was when I was a kid, though? Muppet Treasure Island.
Good
that
choice.
Shit was my jam. I fucking forgot that in the theaters. To even mention that. I also saw that in theaters. I remember it.
So I have weirdly a vivid memory of going to see it in the theaters, and I was a little upset because it was a good movie and I liked it, obviously. But at the time, it was playing at the exact same time as, I believe, Homeward Bound 2.
I see.
Jeez.
And I went to the theater and there were two movies playing, and one was Muppet Treasure Island and the other was Homeward Bound 2. And I knew my cousin was at Homeward Bound 2. And I was like, I really want to see Homeward Bound 2, but I have to go see Muppet Treasure Island. Luckily, Muppet Treasure Island rules. And it was my dumb kid brain, which my dumb kid brain did that a lot. Like, for one of my other cousins' birthdays, they all went to see Mulan. And I was like, hell no. I'm going to see Air Bud Golden Receiver.
Oh, piece of shit. Ew.
You know, for my age though, it was exactly what I needed to see. A dog movie about football.
I do think that my favorite thing about Muppet Treasure Island, and then I promise I'll stop talking about Tim Curry, but my favorite thing ever is that in hindsight, it is fully canon that Tim Curry fucks Miss Piggy, because they heavily imply that they used to be lovers in the film. Wow. Like when she and Kermit are thinking of like breaking up, they heavily fucking imply that Tim Curry and Miss Piggy used to fuck. And I love that for him. I love that for her. I love that for me. I love that for all of us.
I think the world is a better place with that being out there.
I 900% agree.
Great. That's a lot. That's a large percent.
Did you ever, has D'Angelo ever told you the story about why he hates the Hey Arnold movie?
Nope.
It's because they had a class trip and everybody voted. They had to vote on what movie they wanted to see. And everybody in the class picked the Hey Arnold movie over the Powerpuff Girls movie. They were going to the theater. So he didn't get to see the Powerpuff Girls movie in theaters. He had to go see the Hey Arnold movie, which is worse. Significantly worse.
Okay, but why didn't you guys just sneak into the other movies if you didn't want to go to the ones?
They were squares, man. They were kids.
Dude.
Square kids.
Yeah,
my church took us all to see The Passion of the Christ, and I snuck out and I saw Scooby-Doo.
That's which one? See, sneak out.
That's no, good.
The Passion of the Christ to this day, but I have
that's
seen
a nasty
Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo's better.
I made the right call.
It's a nasty sneak out.
Dude, it sure is. Especially when you're with your pastor, dude. I had to be so sly.
I'll be back. I'm going to
I'm gonna get more popcorn. Don't worry. The line might be super, super long, though. So don't wait up.
Yeah. I'm totally not going to go watch Matthew Lillard
Okay, but if I'm not mistaken, if you saw the if you snuck out of the Passion of the Christ to see Scooby-Doo, you didn't see Scooby-Doo. You saw Scooby-Doo Monsters Unleashed. Scooby-Doo 2.
Yes, yes, yes. Scooby-Doo Monsters Unleashed. The difference.
That's a nastier. Yes.
No, it was Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed. Yes, you are correct. I'm sorry that I shortened it by just calling it Scooby-Doo. That's
they are different movies.
They are different movies. I apologize.
I would love it if we got a third in that and if we rounded out the trilogy. Bring James Gunn back. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's start that right. Let's lead that charge. Cartoons That Curse fans, please start hashtagging Scooby-Doo 3. Wherever
SD3.
You want. SD3.
SD3. Yeah, let me see that that Joe Cena Pussycats movie.
Yeah, I love that movie.
It's so fucking good.
It's so good.
It's the best fucking movie.
It's so
I watched
good.
It a lot when I was a kid. It was always on HBO and I would just turn it on whenever it was on. My
I
favorite
still
joke
love the song from that so much. It's such
There's
a
good
song.
I love the song.
The first time I ever saw it was during the pandemic.
Really?
As an adult. Yeah, and it's so good. Even as an adult, it's just so good. It's like it's really funny and it's like smart and it's like really meta. Like
I have to rewatch
it
because
I made my two best friends be the Pussycats with me because obviously I was Josie. And I remember my friends did not like comics at all, but I sold it to them by being like, no, we're just going to be rock stars with cat ears. It's going to be fucking awesome. And then I forced them to do the costume I wanted to do because they thought I was a nerd.
That's so funny. I need to rewatch it because it's been so many years that I remember almost nothing about it. But other than that, I really liked it. And I remember one joke specifically that I like, and that was...
I doubt it.
It's very specific and obscure. Oh, maybe it is because it actually relates to something you love, Tariq. But it's a joke where like at the end, Josie's apologizing to them and she says something like, if I could go back in time, I would like just undo everything I did to you or whatever. And Tara Reid goes, if I could go back in time, I'd want to meet Snoopy.
You know what I thought the one thing you remembered was in like the climax, one of them is like, you messed with the wrong pussy. And then like she like kicks him.
So
she, okay.
I did not remember that.
That is more than likely the reason that movie is rated PG-13.
Probably.
Yeah, for sure.
We should throw that on our Patreon list. That's gonna go on the list for our Patreon stuff. Yeah.
I'd love to.
Fuck, okay.
We didn't talk about this episode.
We didn't talk about it at all. But it's okay.
Yeah,
let's talk real quick.
There was
let's
a
talk
dog. It was nice.
The dog's great. And also, I love the sequence where after Lana has like stormed off because she's mad at Archer. And I like the scene where he's talking to the dog and he basically convinces himself, like, fuck, I need to go back and get Lana, because it's almost like his conscience. It's almost like him. He's like talking to the dog and it's a conversation with the dog, but he's really talking to himself. And I really like how they frame that scene where he's like having the conversation with the giant dog to decide, oh fuck, I need to be a better person. I really fucked up because she left all of her stuff at the back of the car and now she's going to die. So I better go save Lana.
I think it's interesting. Like that scene in general, which is kind of how they set up how not only how Archer feels about Lana, but how he treats her. It's kind of like the only way I could reference cartoons is with more cartoons. So it's kind of like Hey Arnold, right? It's like Helga, like how Helga treats Arnold.
Yeah.
Isn't really like how she thinks about him. She treats him bad because that's kind of what you do as a kid. And I think what's interesting about Archer is that like, he's not one of those people that didn't necessarily have a childhood, but he didn't necessarily have to grow up either. So he's kind of mentally, in a lot of respects, is kind of still stuck that way.
Right.
So it makes sense for him to, I guess, if he really like cares about someone, to treat them that way and like talk to them the way he talks to Lana, I guess. Like it's childish, and I guess for him that like it makes a lot of sense.
That's a good point.
That is a really good point.
It's also interesting.
Smarty
like,
pants.
Smart riffic Tariq. That actually,
I like how like this is going on Spotify too, so they couldn't, like, whoever's listening didn't see me do poses. So when she complimented me, it just sounds like I just got really quiet.
That did actually remind me though of, like, it is interesting though. It reminded me of something you guys were talking about earlier, is when Archer's calling everyone to what save him from Canada is it, and he calls Lana last. And that's like, I think that really speaks to, A, we learned like last season, he basically talks about how Lana is his only friend, which is accurate. Mm-hmm. And I think that says a lot that he called Lana last because he didn't want her to like hate him more, right?
Yeah.
Like he's trying to stop. He's doing his best to like mitigate how much she hates him. He's like thinking Lana's like, I don't want to bother Lana with this.
There are so many situations in which I would call you before I would call Brett any day, because I don't want to make him more mad. I would call you or Mars or like Lisa. I would not call Brett to get me out of trouble. Are you fucking kidding me? No fucking way.
You heard it here first, Brett.
Sorry, Brett. I love you. I love you very much. But if I'm in jail, I'm not calling you. Which is fine. Like, he's great. Like, if he hears this, he's going to be like, yeah, please don't call me if you're in jail.
I don't want to hear it.
I don't want to fucking know that shit. Please don't even get me involved. I don't have the money.
All right. Well, let's move on to the papal chase. The
papal chase. I was texting John earlier while I was watching this, because it just was so boring. I don't know why. I like couldn't get into it, and I kept having like the hardest time paying attention. And I caught myself doing that thing where I would like not listen for like 15 minutes and then go, oh shit, fuck, where did I leave off? And like have to go back. I did that like 4 times, and then I was like, you know what? This isn't meant to be. I'm going to let you guys talk about this one the most, because I was bored as fuck. Sorry.
It's not one of my favorite. It's not one of my favorites either, but there is a lot of stuff I love about it. I just love that they were like, we'll just make Woodhouse look like the Pope.
I do love anything with Woodhouse in it. I really do. But I just like the whole storyline lost me. Like the whole entire thing as a whole.
I really like, I just like they reused Woodhouse's character model for the Pope. I thought that was funny. And then, I like all of the stuff with like Woodhouse being a junkie is funny in this episode. How he accidentally sticks Pam twice with his heroin needle.
Yeah.
And I don't know. There's just like a lot of funny moments with the Pope, like especially in the car chase that I like. When like they're like, Pam's a Lutheran. He's like, Luther had some good points. there's some funny stuff in it, but it is overall, I agree, one of the less interesting episodes of the season for me.
Yeah, I mean, like I obviously wouldn't say I hated it. It was just underwhelming. It was just right. Like, I could have watched the whole thing on my phone and like not realized that I was paying too much attention to Twitter after the episode. Like, I could have done that.
This is the first Field Agent Pam.
Yeah,
it is the first Field Agent Pam, right?
It sure is, Buckaroo.
Which is great. I do like that. It is funny how they just slowly make everyone field agents. Like, but also Pam should have been a field agent before Cyril was.
Oh, 100%. Pam is so much better than Cyril.
Yeah, and she also just is like tougher than Cyril and can like take a lot more than Cyril. It's like Cyril's such a little wuss.
He's a puss.
Yeah, he really is.
Little baby bitch.
He really is.
Oh, I forgot about this, but like my jaw hit the floor when Pam dropped the mirror on the Pope.
Yes, I thought they crushed the Pope to death.
That was rough. I was like, oh no. Yep.
That was rough. I agree. I'm trying to think of what else about this episode like really stood out to me. I like those settings. Being in the Vatican is cool. Another twist ending, the Cardinal. It was the Cardinal who wanted to kill the Pope. Yeah, there's a lot I like about this episode on paper, but again, it was also, for me, a underwhelming. Underwhelming affair.
Underwhelmed.
it's a little middle one for me. I'll say. The car chase looks good, too.
The car chase does look good. Really it does. Yeah. In general,
the car chase looks fun.
In general, things are animated really fucking well. This season, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you guys wish that the episode had been them undercover at the Vatican?
Yes.
Yeah.
They like just sneak into the Vatican at night, and then it's a chase the rest of the way.
That's true. They do like set it up like they're supposed to be undercover, and then they're and they're making fun of Archer's like terrible Italian or whatever.
Maybe they just couldn't get past that. How can we convincingly make them undercover at the Vatican?
At the Vatican, right. But I agree. That would have been way more interesting to me. I think that would have created for funnier predicaments of them trying to like sneak by as members of the clergy, you know.
But then what is it? It's like the millionth episode that's like there's a threat against the Pope and we have to be undercover and make sure that it doesn't happen.
Right. Right, true. But they could, I don't know, maybe it just should have been maybe the episode should have been something different.
No, they could, man, they could have. This is like Prince and the Pauper, almost.
You almost said Principal and the Pauper.
Yeah, I almost said Principal like a dickhead.
Principal and the Pauper, only on Disney Channel.
only on Disney Plus.
No, Principal and the Pauper is a Simpsons episode that we talk about a lot.
I was picturing it being like a Disney Channel original movie about like funny. A kindly old schoolmaster who takes pity on a young poor student, and it's like a posh like a posh private academy, you know, and they let in one poor kid every year, and like this year like the principal
you should write DCOMs. Why aren't you writing DCOMs?
Why don't I?
Beats me.
Bag.
I don't have much else about the papal chase.
Me
cool
either.
Setting. Could have been better. Funny heroin jokes. Woodhouse is great. Anything else? You guys got anything else?
Nah.
Cool. Cool, cool, it's cool, cool. Here. Let's move on to C-Tunt. So C-Tunt part one and part two to me feel pretty separate, which seems to be the case for a lot of these two-parters in Archer. Even the Heart of Archness, every episode feels pretty distinct. But the first one, because the first one takes place entirely on the fancy helicopter, like the rich people helicopter. And the whole plot of the first one is basically Cheryl's brother trying to basically form a conservatorship over her because she's insane. And
he's trying to Jamie Spears her ass.
Yeah, but truthfully, like Cheryl should probably have someone watching out for her. She's not.
I mean, that was a fucking joke in the episode. Everyone was like, would that really be a bad thing?
Yeah, maybe that's right. Maybe that's a good idea. But they, and that's like the whole plot is like him going around and trying to get everyone to admit, like, yeah, Cheryl's nuts, right? Yeah, she's nuts. I also like the setting. I think this one feels similar to a lot of the ones that I love in seasons two and three, like, or seasons one and three. Season one's got Skytanic, which anytime like the whole crew is on something traveling somewhere, some fancy machine traveling somewhere, I'm like, oh, I like this setting. Skytanic rules. and then when they were on the train, I really like when they're on the train in season three as a setting. And so this one, it once again is like, oh, we're on a fancy helicopter going where we need to go. I also liked Archer's just like obsession with making a billion drinks.
Oh, and I was going to say, it's that in the part one, and then fucking part two when Mallory realizes that there's no drinks anymore. Mm-hmm. And that she right. should have drunk on the fancy helicopter, and she's big mad.
Yeah, that's very Mallory, which I'm a fan of. I'm a fan of things that are very Mallory.
Same.
But... yeah, I also think Eugene Merman is such a good voice actor, and he's really great.
He's so funny.
He's really funny in this episode. I'm a big fan of him in this episode. I also like, I also like Cheryl just going nuts. Also, Cheryl's weird, like going insane where she's hearing the music stings.
Yes. Oh my god. And she just keeps being like, don't worry. It's non-diegetic sound.
It's non-diegetic. Yeah. The first time they tried to sell that, I didn't really understand, because they have that weird moment at the end of an act where they do the music sting, and she's looking like suspiciously, and then they do the music sting and she like looks around, and I'm like, what is she looking around for? Why did they like hold on that beat? And then the second time is when she's like, it's non-diegetic.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
That
she starts to have like a breakdown. So she's like, she just calls out John Williams.
I think it's a good episode. I really like C-Tump part one. I like the setting. I like the guest stars. And I like getting to know Cheryl's family a little more. And like, we learn a little bit more about her childhood dynamic. Is this the one where we see the flashback where she was like burning down her gazebo?
Yes, she committed arson on the gazebo.
As a child. Childhood arson.
As a child. Child gazebo arson. That's good a crime stuff. You don't see every day.
Do you guys have anything else you love about this one?
My first two notes. The first note says Gene in all lowercase letters. And the second note says, oh, gross. His girl is Louise.
That's just because you're too Bob's Burgered.
Yeah, that's true.
But
yeah.
It is like, but this is, I guess, something we talked about earlier. It's so annoying that they were both in an episode together, two episodes together, and that they didn't record them to be, and that they didn't get them to be in the premiere with the Bob's Burger stuff. It's so weird.
All right. Yeah. It was pretty weird. But this one is, especially compared to the second one, this one is like really like plot driven. It felt like, even out of all the ones this season, it felt like a lot of it was set up for the next one almost. Like it was just kind of like hitting every beat that it needed to in order for them to be ready to tell the story in the second one almost.
Kind of. I don't know. I don't know if I agree, because I feel like the conflicts were separate. Like, I think the conflict of this one felt more like her brother trying to get money out of her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is like, oh shit, some dude is holding the C-Lab hostage, you know?
Okay, yeah.
But you're right, they do like set it up, like especially at the end when they like very directly are like here's what's going on at the C-Lab. Mm-hmm. Which I do like. Should we move on to that episode? Should we move on to part two?
Yeah. Oh, just really quick though, I forgot to mention that another thing that I do really like about this episode is that Cecil is dressed like a little baby Steve Zissou.
Oh, he is. That's true.
That makes my heart feel real happy.
That's
life
true.
Aquatic.
I also wanted to mention that Pam eating the soy and being allergic to it.
Oh my god.
Ridiculous.
Oh my god. It's so funny though.
It's
I was
so funny.
Laughing so hard.
And
I
very
mean, it's
gross.
It's so dumb and it's so gross, but I don't know why that was cracking me the fuck up when I watched it.
It's very funny.
Just her continuing to shove it in. She's just like, I can have a few more as long as you have an EpiPen on board. That's like how I imagine Pugsley eats snacks, where he's like, well, you'll get me to the emergency vet in time if I eat a whole pound of butter, so I'm going to go for it.
Pam and Pugsley have a lot in common.
Pam and Pugsley have so much in common.
All right, well, let's move on to C-Tunt part two, which is crazily...
C-Tunt.
just a C-Lab 21 crossover, which is wild. Like, this Captain Murphy is literally a C-Lab character. Oh,
that's why I didn't understand what you were talking about when you said there were a bunch of crossovers, because I've never seen that show.
Oh, yeah, so I've never seen that either. I didn't know what you meant either. I was just like, Box.
So John Hamm plays him. John Hamm plays Captain Murphy, which is great. Great guest star.
Dude, I love John Hamm. I didn't know that.
I've never seen that show, though.
He was played by someone else in the original show who died, but they got John Hamm to play him here. But it's literally like, so C-Lab 2021 is one of those Adult Swim comedic Hanna-Barbera spinoffs. So there was a show back in the 70s called C-Lab 2020, which was like a genuine like action under the sea Hanna-Barbera cartoon. And then Adam Reed and another writer made C-Lab 2021 for Adult Swim, which is the comedic sequel to C-Lab 2020. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure they actually just use footage from C-Lab 2020.
That's funny. In the original.
And they dub over it.
2020. I think so. I think it is one of those, because it is early on, like the Adult Swim stuff, when they're making stuff cheap.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that makes sense. You just reminded me of something that happens earlier in the season that I didn't write down, but I remember, and I don't remember what episode it is. Oh, I know what episode it is. It's the Chase one, the Pope one.
Yeah.
Archer says that his research was watching every episode of Lucy, the Daughter of the Devil. And I'm one of the five people on the planet that knows what that show is. However, and I know that it's John Benjamin plays the devil in that.
Right.
Oh, that's fun.
I was wondering, I didn't get the chance to look. I was wondering if there was like any connection beyond that with like Archer and that. Well, like Reed do that too, or was he there?
I don't know if Adam Reed was involved. But I do know Lucy, Daughter of the Devil was a Lauren Bouchard show, who's the Bob's Burgers guy. So he did Home Movies, and then I believe he did Lucy, Daughter of the Devil afterwards.
Okay.
But let's see. Maybe there's maybe that's why they knew each other through that. I don't know. Obviously, well, if John Benjamin was in this, that makes sense. He's been in every Lauren Bouchard show. He was, because he's in he's in Home Movies, and he's in Lucy, Daughter of the Devil, and he's in and he's obviously in Bob's Burgers. But yeah, I don't know if there's any Adam Reed connection there. Obviously, these guys were all working at William Street and doing Adult Swim shit.
Absolutely.
For all of the 2000s.
Honestly, the voice actor connection could just be enough. I was just wondering if there was like anything else. But I did think that's such a bizarre, like, specific reference that, like,
yeah,
damn near nobody would get. Like, and then and the joke is Archer saying that the show is underrated. Which is barely a joke.
That's true.
It stood out.
I really love the setting of the C-Lab. I kind of wish we had gotten both. Like, I wish we had more episodes set at the C-Lab. It's just it's a cool location.
I liked
this episode a lot. I like the setting, and I like the conflict of just like, there's a madman at the bottom of the sea. We have to do what he says. Yeah, I enjoyed this one a lot, but I think what I like most about it is like the ending stuff. I like the ending, like the big emotional ending and the big like sacrifice that Archer makes for Lana, and that like initially he's just like it's literally the change is like once he learns that Lana is pregnant. Literally, it's all it is. It's just that he knows that she's pregnant, and he just like flips a switch and is just like, oh, Lana, here's the gear. Like, I'm going to potentially kill myself so that you guys can get out of here.
Yeah.
It's nice. I like it. I like when it seems like they're over, like there's always, each season I feel like is a little bit more like humanizing and like moving the dial on Archer to be a little bit better of a person, which is nice.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Guys, got any other thoughts on C-Tunt part two?
C-Tunt's really fun to say.
C-Tunt.
I like saying it.
C-Tunt.
C-Tunt.
I really like
C-Tunt.
I really like what Archer says to Lana when he decides to give her like the last helmet. Yeah, when he says you're gonna be a mom, just promise me that you'll be a better one than mine.
Yeah,
I thought that was so nice. Yeah, I thought that scene was just really sweet.
It's a sweet scene. It's maybe my favorite scene in the season. It's really nice. Yeah, I like
and
it a
she's
lot.
Really like when they're going through the water and everything, like she's like it, like you could tell it like does something for her, and mm-hmm. she's like yeah. really protective of him that whole time.
Totally,
you know what I mean. I thought that was really great. And even though it, first of all, I wrote, dude, no way is Ray handicapped again.
They do it every season.
The fact that it ends with that is the worst.
Whitney, before that, I like Archer and I like Archer tickling Ray. I thought that was
I did
like,
too.
Like, I thought that awesome.
It was sweet.
Yeah,
it made me smile a lot. Obviously, it leads to like the big defibrillator accident. But yeah, I don't know if Whitney, if you remember though, but this is the third season in a row where the finale reveal is that Ray is handicapped. Like the first, it's they do it and then they actually, the reveal after the first time is that he was faking it. And then the second time it becomes real. And then now he's like handy. Now he gets the bionic legs and they're like, oh, they short circuited or whatever. So he's.
Can he just replace the circuit board? Like, chill.
That's what I assume.
Can whip that up
I'm pretty
on
sure.
real quick.
Exactly. I'm pretty sure that happens.
I wouldn't be such a baby about it if I were you.
Yeah, but it is a funny beat for him to be a baby about it. Yeah,
it is.
It's good. Good season of Archer. Strong, solid season of Archer. Show's still funny. I like it a lot. You guys got anything else on how do you feel about season 4 overall?
Oh man, I really like it. I think it's one of my sorry. a little squeaky on.
It's a little yawny. It's a boring season. Just kidding.
No, it's not at all. Sorry. I just did a squeaky on. I really like this season. I think that besides all of the clearly outdated jokes, I think it's one of my favorite seasons. I really like it. I had a good time.
I think it was a little bit of a step down after season 3, which was so strong, but it's still a really good season. Also, just like those random like handful of problematic jokes were just like,
they were very concerning. However, I love the Bob's Burgers episode is like one of my favorites of
it's
the
great.
Entire
It's a great episode.
So I think that's why I ranked this season so high. It's mostly because of that episode.
I think 3 is my fave. And then honestly, it's kind of a crapshoot between 1, 2, and 4. Like they're all pretty on par to me. I'd have to think about it more closely. But I'm very, very, very excited to revisit Archer Vice soon.
Yeah,
we'll be talking about that soon.
That's the one.
Yeah. Whitney, you got any thoughts on Archer Vice before we start it? Do you like Vice? You big fan?
Yeah. No, I've never seen Vice. Like
Wait,
Miami
really?
Vice? Are you
No, Archer Vice.
Archer Vice.
No. I thought you were asking if I had seen Miami Vice.
No, just Archer Vice.
Oh, just Archer Vice. I don't know. I have no thoughts. No thoughts. Head empty. No Vice.
Okay, cool.
it doesn't matter what the answer is. The answer is still that.
Let's do our rankings then. Good season of Archer. So
I did it this time.
You did it. All right, I'm going to start, and then you can go, Whitney, and then Tariq will be last.
I will.
All right, number 13, The Wind Cries Mary. Number 12, The Papal Chase. 11, Legs. 10, Coyote Lovely. 9, Viscous Coupling. 8, C-Tunt Part 1. 7, Midnight Ron. 6, C-Tunt Part 2. 5, The Honeymooners. 4, Live and Let Dine. 3, Un Chien Tangerine. 2, Once Bitten. 1, Fugan Riffs. That's me.
We have 2 that line up, and then the rest are just all over the place.
Well, you guys are wrong about Once Bitten, so.
All right. Sounds good. Okay, I've got The Papal Chase, The Wind Cries Mary, Vicious Coupling, The Honeymooners, Midnight Ron, Legs, Coyote Lovely, Once Bitten, Sea Tunt 1, Sea Tunt 2, Live and Let Dine, Unshen Tangerine, and Fugue and Riffs.
Good wow. List.
Yeah.
We line up with one. All right. Let's do it. 13, Once Bitten, 12, Coyote Lovely, 11.
Your last one?
Last yeah, one? Last you don't one? Like the butthole bite
cringe.
That much?
Yes. We're ending the podcast cringe. Early. All right, continue.
Let's do it. 11, Sea Tunt Part 1, 10, Sea Tunt Part 2, 9, Vicious Coupling, 8, the, how you say that?
Unshen Papal Tangerine?
Chase.
Oh, Papal Chase. Oh, no, not Papal Chase. Yeah.
Papal.
It's like what it means to be of Pope.
Yeah.
To be of Pope.
7, Live and Let Dine. 6, Unshen Tangerine. 5, Midnight Ron. 4, The Wind Cries Mary. 3, The Honeymooners. 2, Legs, and 1, Fuge and Rips.
We all had the same number one.
We all put that as the same number one. Look at us all agreeing.
It's the best one.
It is really
so good. I really love it.
Can I give you my top three?
Mikey. Oh, yeah. Mikey, what's your top three?
I don't want to do the whole ranking, but I had to come to the rescue here. so I'll say number 3, Live and Let Dine.
Nice.
Even though my one gripe with that is I wish it stuck to the bit of it being like shot like a reality TV show. The whole
I know.
Time.
I do too.
Yeah,
I agree.
But it's but I love that episode. Yeah. Number 2, Midnight Ron. I mean, what's not to love about Ron Cadillac? Number 1, Once Bitten.
Yeah.
Like, how am I not?
Whoa!
Yeah!
So
I gotta come to the rescue real quick.
This girl still
got in. Oh man. So my man Peter Serafinowicz does 3 voices in that episode.
That's right. I didn't even mention that.
Come on.
I can't believe I didn't bring that
he
up.
He plays cut rate James Mason, Archer's dad, and like the Turkish leader that they're trying to get the anti-venom from.
Yeah, what's the word? Glarp glock or whatever? That they there's like 6 words.
It means like a yeah. bunch
it's like
of
a Rick
things.
And Morty sounding word. That's all yeah, I know.
It totally is.
Also, Once Bitten has one of my favorite jokes from Cheryl, which is like, if it's even really a joke, she has that like long, like sober cutting monologue to Lana where she just like peels back all her insecurities and like cuts through the bullshit and like offers her analysis of Lana. I think it ends with her saying like, and this spy agency is the only true love you'll ever know.
Yeah.
And then after like the beat, she's like, what? Oh my God, was I talking?
Yeah. That was a good fight.
Oh, I forgot about that one. I love that. That's so funny. Oh man. Cheryl is the best. She's the funniest character. Oh man. Was I talking?
We love Cheryl.
Mike, you got any thoughts before we knock out on season 4? You like season 4?
I do like season 4. I watched a lot of it today. I think it's my least favorite of the first 4 seasons.
For sure.
It kind of has that quality of... I don't know if any of us here have watched Sex and the City, but season 3 of Sex and the City contains like all of the problematic episodes. Like almost every, I mean, there's things that age bad throughout the show, but season 3 specifically, you can tell they were like, we're going to come in and we're going to push the envelope.
Yeah.
I feel like there was a little bit of that here.
Right.
I don't know. You struggle, you get a few seasons in, like what can you do? Push the envelope.
Right. Well, you could start theming your seasons. Which is what they chose to do next, which is, I think, is ultimately a smart and creative move. But yeah, it's a good season. It's you know, the show's still strong, even though it's not, you know, sometimes, even though sometimes it's making you go, it's still a good season. Cool. You guys got anything else before we wrap this out?
I have a dog. His name is Pugsley. He's very nice. That's all
Whitney,
I have to
do
say.
Your plugs. Plug your stuff.
Okay, I am Whitney. You can find me at Whitney Puppy on all platforms and at Whitney Vision on YouTube.
Yeah, go check out Whitney Vision. Yeah. They got some great vids, really good stuff. Highly recommend. Subscribe, comment, like, you know the biz.
Do it. It'll be fun for you and money for me, which is my favorite two combinations.
Cool. And with that, I want to say...
Can I do a plug? Yeah, what? I got a plug. Me and Johnny's friend, Lydia of The Simpsons Theory, has a book.
Woo! Hell yeah! Get it.
Bam. I got my copy too.
Okay.
Yes, Simpsons go check out... Secrets. Go check out The Simpsons Secret. It's a cromulent guide to how The Simpsons predicted everything. If you haven't checked out The Simpsons Theory, it's a great YouTube channel all about The Simpsons. Lydia and James run it, and it's really great. Mm-hmm. And the book is available now. Although she did tell me today that the book is currently sold out. So, but by the time this releases, Woo! hopefully they got some. Yeah, hopefully they got some more. So go check it out. Good book. Good Simpsons literature.
That's right. Yeah. If you love the tangents here, you're going to love the tangents in that book.
All right. And with that, I want to thank Michael Yunez for producing and editing our podcast. I want to thank Carrie Feek for amazing artwork. I want to thank Jake Neutron for our theme song. I want to thank Toonrific Tariq for being our co-host. And I want to thank Whitney Van Lanningham for being our amazing guest and talking Archer with us. And with that, thank you very much. See you next week.
See you. Bye-bye. Bye. Happy birthday, Jake. Happy belated.